Morning, family. I know you're only excited because Lucas is here. I understand. Sorry. My name is Stephen Oguaya. My beautiful wife, Hannah, and our beautiful child are in the back right now. And round of applause for them. And we currently serve in the Baltimore campus ministry. And yeah, woo for Baltimore, absolutely. And it's weird. I feel like I'm 17 every time I come here. Like, as soon as I walked in the door, I was like, well, I am a child. But I'm very, very happy to be here. It's just remembering what Brooklyn is for me is literally life-changing every time I think about how grateful I am for this group right here. And interestingly enough, the church in Baltimore meets in Brooklyn. That's the name of the city. That's the name of the town that we meet in. It's Brooklyn, Maryland. And Vinny and I actually live down the street from each other and both go to church in Brooklyn because we can't escape. So it's very, very just amazing to be home. And I know that you guys have a theme. Ashton did a great job at contacting me well ahead of the time. And my dad told me about a theme like 2 days ago. This isn't really fitting the theme, but it's the Bible and it's church. So I apologize to Ashton and my dad. So in Baltimore, what we've been looking at for actually the entire year is the parables of Jesus. And it has been extremely, extremely powerful to just sit and essentially just listen to Jesus' teachings. And what we're going to be looking at today is one of them that I think where I am personally right now, this is probably one of the most difficult ones to process as true. We're going to be reading the parable of the persistent widow in Luke 18. So you can turn your Bibles to Luke 18. We'll get right into it. Luke 18, we're going to read from 1 to 8. And what's been very beneficial about looking at the parables, there's, of course, as with any text in the Bible, there's going to be times where you read something 1,000 times and read it again, and it means something different based on where you're at. But there are some just permeating universal truths about some of these parables that we can't escape from, that this is Jesus' intent of what he wants us to understand. And we're going to be trying to take a look at that today as well. So in Luke 18, we're going to read from verse 1. It says, "Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and never give up. He said, in a certain town there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, 'Grant me justice against my adversary.' For some time he refused, but finally he said to himself, 'Even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I'll see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me.' And the Lord said, 'Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" If there is one thing that you take away from the message today, if only one thing sticks in your mind and you remember, and just as the single, this is it. Remember to always pray and never give up. Always pray and never give up. If you're doing amazing today, if you feel just saturated in God's blessings, everything you want, you feel like you have, all of your teams are winning, you're just in a good place. Always pray, never give up. If you're hanging in there, fighting the good fight, things aren't necessarily going completely your way, but you understand that God is faithful, so you're gonna hold on tight to his teachings, even though things aren't going perfectly well. Always pray, and never give up. And if you feel like you've already let go, and you're here because that's your Sunday thing now, and your heart has left a long time ago, and this is just kind of a routine, and any church bureaucracy reason that you can get to leave, you're waiting for that to happen, always pray and never give up because of who you're praying to. In Luke 18, you have these two characters. You have this judge who doesn't care about God, doesn't care about people. He's just not a good guy. We're going to assume he's a Patriots fan as well. And he spilt the sorrel all over the cornbread on Thursday. Just knocked the whole pitcher over. Why are you here? This is not a good guy. And then this widow who's asking for justice. That's very important. She comes to this judge asking for not some outrageous lawsuit trying to take advantage of the system. All she wants is her rightful legal protection. She wants justice. And then this unjust bad guy judge essentially says, you know what? You're just annoying. Like you're bugging me to the point where I'm willing to readjust my schedule to make things work here. So his lack of compassion had been trumped by his lack of willingness to keep seeing this woman. Just, you know what? You're bugging me so much. What is it you want? Justice? Okay, here's justice. Please don't come back here again. Verse 6, listen to what the unjust judge says. Now, if you've taken Regents English, do they still have Regents here? Wow, that's crazy that still exists. So if you've taken Regents English, you know what a foil is. A foil is essentially a character that exists to highlight the traits of another character. Like in Batman, right? So there are things about Batman that you only know to be true because of the existence of the Joker. Like all these negative things about the Joker highlight the positive things about Batman. Or further back, The Matrix. Agent Smith, right? Heartless, soulless, doesn't really care about stuff. Because of who he is, it highlights how much Neo cares about things and how much of his decisions are determined by other people versus just the heartless machine that Agent Smith is. This judge is not God. I think sometimes we read this parable and plug God into his character, and we say, okay, well, here's a parable about a woman and God. Not at all. God is not present in this parable at all. You have a persistent widow and a judge who's nothing at all like God. He exists to highlight the positive traits of who God is, not to present God is the judge. No, not at all. God is not in this parable at all. If someone who doesn't care about man's needs at all can be annoyed enough to grant justice, then a God full of mercy, full of compassion, full of grace, full of power, will then, of course, grant eternal justice to those who are called his children. Listen, if the lady in Chipotle will give you an extra scoop of rice just for asking for it, then a grandmother on Thanksgiving Day will go above and beyond to make sure that you're never hungry again, right? The grandmother is not the lady at Chipotle. It just becomes if she's willing to give me extra rice, of course this family member is going to do whatever it takes to ensure that I never have the hunger growls ever again in my life. This parable is not about bugging God with prayer until he gives you what you want. This parable is about God ultimately providing justice to those that are called his children. And we treat this, keep bugging God, keep persisting like the persistent widow. But that's not the case here. This judge is nothing like God. Consistent prayer isn't to remind God about what you've prayed for, as if he needs reminding. It's to remind you about who you're praying to. I'll say it again. Consistent prayer is not to remind God about your request. It's about to remind you about who you're presenting your requests to. Here's what happens sometimes. We start speaking Christianese with our situations, and we'll say, well, you know, I prayed about it, and then I did this. Or, you know, I'm praying, you asked me to just, well, I'm going to pray about it, which is, you know, Christianese for no, I don't want to do that. But I want more time to think, but pretend to be spiritual. So I'm going to give you a spiritual response to the thing that I don't want to do. But if prayer is supposed to just connect us with the will of God, then praying should then in turn lead you to doing what God's will is. So in a situation where you're responsible, well, you know, I prayed about it and then decided to do, great. If your decision is in line with the will of God, then you're at a place where you're supported by connection and contact with God through prayer. Great. If it's not, it's decoration. It's just like a fancy bow tie what do you call the bows you put on presents? Bows, just a bow. It's a fancy bow that you present on something that's just completely empty. It's handing someone a blank gift card. Like, well, here's the action here, but there's no value in it, but you've said you've prayed, so it sprinkles on a little bit of church on it. But if the action is contrary to the will of God, it's just decoration. This is tough being here. So when my dad got diagnosed with cancer, there was, it's funny, I was talking to Hannah yesterday, and I didn't realize until we spoke how different I view, like, God from, like, the day of diagnosis. I think I changed a lot the way that I understand Christianity just based on my dad's situation, which was weird. You see him more than I do. After the initial surgery, so this was going on like 4 years ago and change. After the initial surgery, he was in a really bad place. There was actually a point where I thought that we had brought him home so that he can kind of be not in a hospital when he eventually goes, because he just wasn't responding well to anything. And there was a night that there was a hurricane warning in Baldwin, and people were evacuating. And it was just my mom, my dad, and myself in the house. And, you know, we didn't leave because, I don't know, I think we were just being stubborn, to be honest. But our neighbors left, most of the neighbors left, because, yeah, it was dangerous. It wasn't a safe place to be. And I remember that night, my dad was in just so much pain that he was just kind of, he couldn't sleep, he was just sitting. I'm not sure if he knew that I was there, but I was standing over him, and he was shaking and sweating and all that. And I remember praying probably the most intensely that I've ever prayed in my life. To this day, I'm not really sure what I prayed for, but it was very, like, very incomplete thoughts, just kind of mumbling stuff, hoping that somehow at the end of it, something good would happen. Now, the next morning, it was chaos outside. I mean, there were trees uprooted, windows smashed. It was a mess. The wind really did a number on our street. And on top of that, in our backyard, there was a beach ball that, so Andrew and I joke around that the people just, like, the forest gives us gifts, It just kind of throws like footballs and volleyballs and stuff over the fence. I think that's where we got the beach ball from as well. So at some point, a beach ball just ended up in our backyard. It was there the day before the hurricane, and it was in the middle of the yard. The next morning, it was in the exact same place. Now, granted, if you're that person and you all, the wind probably spun it around and bounced it everywhere and then ended up back there, sure, you can have that. But what I saw was a beach ball that you can flick and it flies, not move at all in the middle of a hurricane. Now, my perspective at the time was watching what I thought my father dying. And then the question that kind of ended up sticking in my mind is like, well, what's cancer? You know, to like the God that tells the wind where to go. Like, what's financial hardship to a God that invents the thought of currency and provides oxygen to us? You know, what's terminal illness to a God that doesn't work in time frames of 85 plus years, but is working on an eternal spectrum, that this is just kind of temporary, you know, blinks. You know, what's relationship issues to a God that is our Father? You know, like what's any of these challenges to a God that is so much bigger? And that's who we're praying to, not this unjust judge that is annoyed at our request, but this God full of mercy, full of power, and able to do much more than what we can ask or even imagine. And that's who we're praying to, and because of that, we need to always pray and never give up because of who God is. Now, my dad is still very sick. And even though God is bigger than sickness, it doesn't mean that there's an amount of prayer necessary for me to get to that prayer point of now God working and healing my dad. But what constant prayer will do is increase my trust. You know, I think here's where the Santa Clausification of God messes us up sometimes, is that we ask for things and it doesn't happen the way we want it, and then we get bitter at God. Like, God did something wrong because this outcome isn't the way that I wanted it. If you always pray and never give up and constantly remind yourself of who it is that you're praying to, it removes the bitterness. There's no room to be bitter at a God that's bigger than your problem. There's no room to be bitter at a God that's bigger than anything that you have wrong going on because of who he is. And that's why we need to always pray and never give up. Always pray, never give up. And also, the reason that works for us is because of what you're promised. And based on this parable, God's promise is justice. And here's what I think we get wrong as well. And I think we treat vengeance the same way, where it's like, you know, vengeance belongs to God, right? So because I love God, if someone hurts me, then God needs to avenge me by hurting that person. Like, let someone cut you off in traffic. The thoughts, if we were to project the thoughts that have come up in my mind this week from New York driving, oh my goodness, I know that God promises to smite his enemies. So I think I'm in a good place. I'm not the enemy. It must be this guy that's not obeying the traffic laws the way that I want them to be obeyed. And God, do your thing against it. And then we start being very like spiritually unspiritual. It's like, well, in my BC days, man, like before Jesus, I would have, you give yourself all kinds of like thug credentials that you never had. Say, man, I would have done this, this, and that because, but I won't because of Jesus. And and then we take vengeance and we make it like a tool that we can use, like God was a kind of a genie or something. In the same way, I think we also take justice like that as well, where justice has now become Stephen's preferred outcome in the situation. That's how I'll process justice. And the fact that the term unanswered prayers exist in our culture is proof that we've misunderstood this whole justice thing. Like somehow God just doesn't listen or doesn't answer prayers. So imagine if we treated anything else like that. Like I asked my boss for a raise. Well, what did he say, Stephen? I'm still waiting for an answer. Well, did he say yes? Well, I'm still waiting for an answer. Well, Stephen, did he say no? Yes. Yes, he said no. It's not an unanswered request. The answer was no. I didn't get the thing. Doesn't mean it was unanswered. Hey, you know, I asked this girl to be my girlfriend. Oh, what did she say? I'm still waiting for an answer. Did she say no? Yeah, she said no. It's not unanswered. It's just no. It's just not. Oh, my notes. It's just not what you want. And in this parable, this woman is asking for justice. And I think we have to kind of get in tune with what God's perception of justice actually is. Otherwise, we'll become entitled children that don't get the gift that they want for Christmas. And it's just like, oh, I'm frustrated because God didn't answer my request the way that I wanted him to. And here's the thing about justice as well. It happens, according to this parable, quickly. In verse 8, I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. Now, quickly is relative to your perspective. When you factor in eternity, quickly is tomorrow. It's just okay, boom. It's no matter how long it takes, it's right there. But I think sometimes we get very, very caught up in politics and disagreements and earthly stuff that we somehow think that we're looking for justice here. I want justice right here in my neighborhood, in my country, in my realm of what I can reach. But then if you think about it, like our justice isn't even that great, really. Like it's justice on earth isn't even that good. With how many different opinions even exist in this room, what's justice? You know, like it's our version of justice will cause so much commotion, so much argument, so much bigotry that it doesn't work. But justice, when plugged into eternity, justice when plugged into a heavenly perspective is amazing. It's incredible. Because what you're given, your legal right as a citizen of God's nation is forever with him. That's the justice that he provides. Not this, I would really like a president that meets my needs. That's right now. That's here. If our home or our hope is limited here, yes, freak out, no matter what the outcome is. Please be very, very scared, very nervous, no matter who wins ever. But if our hope and home is in heaven, if that's the justice that we're promised, not an outcome that we want or an outcome that we would prefer, but an outcome that's plugged in to eternity in heaven, oh, that's great. That's amazing. That's something that we should hold on to dearly. And that's another reason we should always pray and never give up, because we have to plug our minds into that fact. That what you're praying for, what God promises, is justice for those that are his children. Let's look at Philippians 4 real quick. Always pray and never give up. because of who you're praying to and because of what you are promised. Philippians 4, from 4, it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. Let your great gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Prayer, petition, and thanksgiving before the request, and your heart will be guarded in the peace of God. Now, if you were to take a transcript of all of your prayers this year, remove emotion, remove circumstance, just take the words that were said and had someone else analyze it, does it show gratitude? Does it show before whatever you're asking for, does it show how grateful you are for the opportunity to even communicate with God and for who he is? Because what this is saying, I mean, you know, I'm a very big fan of spiritual formula. I know sometimes we don't like that, but it helps with the way that I think. Because what's being presented here is, what do you need to do to be covered in the peace of God? I don't think God worries about that much. Now, I don't see God panicking about situations. So in order for me to attain that level of peace, do not be anxious about everything. In every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. We need to be grateful prior to the prayer. That makes 100% of the difference. I know that, you know, that most of America has utilized this Wednesday through Sunday as like a Thanksgiving weekend. And you sit on the table and you talk about what you're thankful for, and it's great. I'm not knocking it at all. But the life of a Christian is a life of thanksgiving. Every single day, every moment of every day, even before you ask, even before you present the request to God. And it needs to be that way, because at that point, regardless of the outcome, you're fine. Regardless, listen, I don't think there's anyone in this room that is currently as invested in my dad's health as I am. If I wait for an outcome to determine my gratitude, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. That is too much of a risk for me to base my response to how I view God, how I view prayer, how I view God's promises on the outcome of my prayer about my dad's situation. I don't think that is what's being presented here. But if I choose to be grateful before, if I choose to put my trust before I even ask for anything, the outcome either makes me joyful and wow, this is incredible that God moved and this was a miracle here. Or the outcome is, this is incredible, that was a miracle here. That's it. That's the only result of being grateful before, that it's victory no matter what the outcome is. No matter what the circumstance plays out, if we're not anxious about anything, every situation, prayer and petition and thanksgiving, present my request, then I'm already covered in the peace of God. And of course, there's hard times, there's mourning, there's really intense sadness, but plugged into the perspective of eternity, I can find peace. No one else offers that. Nothing, no man, no relationship, no job, no career advancement, no nothing. Nothing else promises you, hey, trust, and regardless of outcome, you'll be fine. And if God is presenting that, as a means to cover myself in peace, well, that should change the way that I pray. That should change the way that I process who God is. If I first, I am grateful before anything else for who you are, what you have done for me, and what you promised to do. Even at that point, asking for something seems like, I think I'm good. I think I'm fine. Just recalling what has been done, who God is, and what's being promised. And I appreciate my wife so much because she is excellent at this, at putting faith in situations as well. And I'm not taking that. Please don't leave here thinking that what Stephen told me to do is not pray for the situation, but just kind of be grateful no matter what, and then not ask for it. That's not at all the case. A marriage of both of those things leads to peace. When you are grateful before and you present everything to God in prayer. When both of those things happen, then you're fine. If you're just grateful but don't ask, that can lead to bitterness. And if you're ungrateful and ask, that can lead to bitterness as well. So a combination of both of those is what we need to really make this great. So always pray, never give up because of who God is, what he promises, and what he's done for us already. We'll close with John 14. John 14, 12. Actually, I think for context, let's start at verse 5. John 14, 5. Thomas said to him, "Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way?" Jesus answered, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you know him and have seen him." Philip said, "Lord, show us the Father, and that'll be enough for us." Jesus answered, "Don't you know me, Philip? And after I have been among you such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. Believe me when I say I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe on the evidence of the work themselves. Very truly I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these because I am going to the Father. And I will do whatever you ask in my name so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. You may ask me for anything in my name and I will do it." Now this teaching of Jesus is so important to understand context. Otherwise, you leave here, "Well, God, I want a raise. Where's my raise? Jesus, I want this outcome of this situation. Well, where's my this outcome of that situation?" What Jesus is talking about here is telling his disciples, "Hey, I'm leaving, and I'm going to be with God." They have a hard time understanding that. They're looking for signs, looking for things. No, guys, you don't get it. If you know me, you know God. That's no difference for us. If a relationship with Jesus gives you access to a relationship with God. If you know me, you know God. And by the way, because I'm going to be with him, ask me to do something. Now, if I told you, "Hey, I'm going to the bodega," I'll be, you know, you're going to ask me, "Well, you know, can you grab me a honey bun, bacon, egg, and cheese, and Arizona," right? That's pretty accurate. If I said, "I'm going to go to the White House," you ask me for maybe to present a question or a concern or something. If I say I'm going to, I don't know, but you get like the location changes the nature of what you ask the person. Jesus is going to God, and what happens in that interaction is that God is glorified through his life. So if that's the person going, If Jesus is going, then our requests need to also match his intent in the glorification of God. Because when God is glorified, we benefit. I benefit from a life that glorifies God. And the evidence of that is the opposite. When I try and glorify myself, things go really bad. Things don't work out. People get hurt. There's failure upon failure upon failure. There's emptiness even when I succeed in things. Self-glorification will kill you. Living a life to glorify God gets you to heaven. It transcends all of this and puts you on the same path that Jesus took, going to heaven. So when you present your request to Jesus, remember where he's going. Remember that he's going to speak to he's going to be with the Father in glorification of who God is. And if our lives are doing the same, the challenge for us, our prayers need to be that first the prayers need to glorify God, and our requests need to glorify God. After gratitude, after understanding who God is, what he promises, and after presenting everything, we also need to understand that at the end of this, God needs to be glorified. And I think sometimes we have issues with that because we want ourselves to be the main character. When God is glorified and you are living a life that glorifies God, you win. That's it. That's the formula. Live a life that glorifies God because God is going to be glorified. And if you jump in on that, you're set. If you're trying to do things your own way and customize your version of somewhat Christianity, it misses the God glorification train and it becomes, what does Stephen want to do here? It's evident in the way that the individual will pray, and it's evident in the response to the prayers. But when we give everything, when we give it to glorify God, and our prayers glorify who God is, and we remember to always pray and never give up because of who God is, merciful, gracious, compassionate, loving, patient, powerful, what he's done for us already, what he promises us in eternal justice, not a right now, I'm frustrated at this situation, I'm going to put it on Facebook and hopefully I'll change someone's opinion of the situation. Oh, wow. That's relevant. Okay. Not that sort of justice, but if I do this, I get to be in heaven forever justice. That God, not the unjust judge, but the loving Father presents, you win. And that, if anything else, is reason for us to be grateful. Not because of gifts given or gifts received or outcomes that fit our current desire, but just because of who God is and what he promises us. And for that reason, family, let us remember to always pray and never give up. Amen.